This is Meet the People. I'm Kels Hetherington. My guest is Randy Rudrick. He is the Alaska State Republican Party chairman. I've asked him on Meet the People to discuss Senator Lisa Murkowski's incredible political upset last November, to get his thoughts on former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin's political future. That is, of course, if she still has one in the wake of the Tucson massacre, and to talk with him about legislation proposed by Governor Sean Parnell to reduce Alaska's oil and gas production tax in hopes of stimulating job growth. Mr. Rudrick, thank you for coming on Meet the People.
It is good to participate this morning.
Well, good to have you here. Now, you're just back from Washington, D.C., where you and others in the Republican Party elected a man from Wisconsin named Ranks Priebus, chairman of the Republican National Committee. This was a closely watched event because of the endless controversy surrounding RNC chairman Michael Steele, the incumbent, who was interested in keeping his job as chairman at least for a little while. What happened to Michael Steele?
Well, Michael was clearly the right person in 2009 to help articulate the Republican message right after the 08 election. He had a substantial media presence and had been a spokesman at GOPAC, which he ran for the prior 2 years. And so Michael Steele had a great following. During the election cycle, we did a number of things that turned out very good. First, the substantial victories in not only Virginia, which was kind of likely to happen, but also the election of Chris Christie and many Republicans in New Jersey, and then the final blow in 2009 to the Democrat Party cause, the election of Scott Brown in Massachusetts. That set us up for the 2010 run. We had many great people come forward who could not be recruited to run for office for the U.S. House or Senate, for that matter, in the 06 or 08, and we delivered a crushing defeat to the incumbent party, and the concern at the RNC was the management of RNC. We had seen a substantial reduction in cash on hand from having a $20-plus million carryover from the 08 election to being in excess of $20 million in debt, and that sort of focused us on new leadership. Five people ran. Michael stayed in for the first four rounds, and on the seventh ballot, we finally came to getting a majority for Ranks Priebus.
Now, Ranks Priebus is pretty young. Well, he's not old. He's not young. He's 38 years old, according to the Wall Street Journal. Is he the youngest man to lead the RNC?
To my knowledge, he's the youngest, or at the definitely the younger end of folks. We've had, you know, former governor Gilmore from Virginia, who was in his mid-40s at the time, if I recall correctly. Haley Barbour in the early 90s was in his early 40s. And there have been several other people who were near 40. I just don't know if anybody's been actually under 40.
So he's pretty young. An impressive fellow. I've watched him on YouTube, but I've never been able to see him on TV or heard him on the radio. I'm sure that'll be coming. Were you a supporter of Ranks Priebus?
I was supporting Ann Wagner, the former co-chair of the party in the early part of this decade, who had come home from a tour of duty as an ambassador in Europe and had participated in the campaign to elect Roy Blunt to the United States Senate in Missouri. So I was supporting Ms. Wagner, and there were some folks supporting the former chairman of Michigan, Saul Anousis, Maria Sino, who had held a number of positions within the party but never a member of the RNC, also ran, as well as Steele and Priebus.
So are you happy with Priebus as the chairman?
I think this will work. I really do. He is energetic, motivated, and our main issue is raising money for the foreseeable future, A, to liquidate the debt, and B, to participate in the off-year elections that are going to be occurring this year in places like Maryland and Louisiana and Kentucky, and then prepare for 2012, which has already started with the announcement of Senator Conrad's retirement in North Dakota earlier in the week, and the announcement of Senator Lieberman's projected non-run in 2012. So the future is here.
Now, the Wall Street Journal has been critical of the RNC's performance under the leadership of Michael Steele, and you talked a little bit about that already. The paper said that the organization was less effective in the last couple of election cycles at turning out voters and supporting Republican challengers financially. Specifically, the journal theorized that a more effective and aggressive Republican grassroots organization in 2010 might well have put 21 more House seats into Republican hands. As it was, Republicans picked up 63 House seats. The showing in 2010 was not the best for Republicans. It was similar to 1994, but less good than 1928 or 1946, but still pretty darn good. Do you think that the Republican Party could have done more for Joe Miller in Alaska?
The Republican Party undertook to spend an aggregate of in excess of $900,000 in the Miller campaign in one form or another. And the Miller campaign wound up with over $900,000 in the bank at the end of the year. So we did a number of things in terms of voter turnout. We ran almost the same type of – we ran a voter turnout program that was very similar to what we did in 2004 when Governor Murkowski was when Senator Murkowski was elected to her seat for the first time and ran a more complete program than we did in 2002 when Governor Murkowski ran for election the first time. So we had a fairly substantial program. We had a governor on the ballot, Governor Parnell. We had a United States Senate race. We had a congressional race and a number of highly contested House races where we picked up six new Republicans in the state House and one in the state Senate. So we had an overall good year, and then the complications of the write-in campaign.
Now, Senator Murkowski's primary loss came as a major surprise to Republican National Committee members, or at least the organization made it seem as though it was a surprise. But was it really a surprise to the National Committee, and was it a surprise to you and folks close to you in the Alaska Republican organization?
I think the simple answer to all of those is yes. She was viewed nationally as a very safe incumbent. A year out, 6 months out, and even a month out, you saw very little interest in the race as being contested. We did see a great turnout in the Republican primary. 43% of all Alaska Republicans voted in the primary, which is the highest primary turnout we had ever seen. We had nearly 25% of all Alaskans voted in the Republican primary. The reason the primary numbers were off slightly from the prior two was that virtually no one participated in the Democrat primary.
Do you think that Joe Miller got a fair vote count?
Oh, yeah. I monitored the process very closely. And if you noticed, on the morning after the last votes were actually counted, which I believe was November the 18th, we looked at the data from the party office point of view and acknowledged Senator Murkowski as the winner. The Division of Elections does a very good job of carefully managing the voting process, starting out with the absentee process to the American military, the early voting process where you go to your local clerk's office and vote absentee in person, or the rest of the absentee mail program where you can vote from the comfort of your home or workplace, mail your ballot in, or finally, you can go vote on election day. And the folks that run the polling places historically have been some of the most dedicated people trying to make sure that it's done well, done efficiently and correctly.
Well, good to hear. Now, the Alaska State Legislature it's been pointed out to them that they need to either clarify this election law concerning the spelling of write-in candidate names to prevent future chaotic situations from developing. Is it your thought that the legislature will actually move forward on clarifying that law during its session that started, I think, yesterday, or the day before yesterday?
Day before. I plan to talk to the lieutenant governor here in the very near future. After being gone last week, it hadn't happened this week, but it will happen shortly because of the 90-day session. This needs to get done. We probably will never face a write-in where spelling is as big an issue again, because there's very few folks that have this issue. Of course, we had an Anchorage Senate race between Willikowski and Slopecki, so we do have people with non-traditional simple English names running for Alaskan office. So there may be some need to do this, but I think this issue got a lot more press than it deserved. Many of the ballots that were challenged on form rather than on material substance. There were situations where the names that were challenged was the sequence of Murkowski, Lisa, rather than Lisa Murkowski, which was the perceived most correct way to characterize it. Other write-ins were challenged because they had an R after the name Lisa Murkowski or the word Republican. Hmm. So there wasn't a spelling issue. These were nuanced issues. And the state Supreme Court has held for decades that voter intent is to be recognized. And, of course, if we look back in the complex recount that was done in 2004, Director of Elections Laura Glazer added over 1,000 ballots to the process where she could determine voter intent that was not read by the machines, either too faint a mark, the mark just outside the oval to where it was missed, or in some cases, yes, Alaskans follow instructions, kind of. circled the name of the person they were voting for. They did not fill in the circle.
All right.
And so those were counted. And as a result, Knowles gained about 550 votes, and Murkowski gained about 475 votes. Reduced the margin slightly, but voter intent has been part of the process for decades. So to argue that this is unique, bad, and unclear is to take the position that is frequently taken by someone who didn't win, that there must be something wrong with the process. We just need to do a better job of getting people to the polls and voting for a candidate, because one thing we always must remember, you have no right to complain about the results, the process, or anything else if you forgot to participate.
Mm. Now, okay, for those who are just joining us, this is Meet the People. I'm Kels Hetherington, and my guest is Alaska Republican State Party Chairman Randy Rudrick. Meet the People is produced in Sandpoint, Alaska at 8:30 a.m. KSDP Radio and broadcast on the Native Voice One radio network. Randy, how did Lisa Murkowski manage to turn things around after losing in the primary? After all, Murkowski's name wasn't even on the ballot, and it's a name like Murkowski that's long and difficult to spell. No one since Strom Thurmond in 1954 in South Carolina has managed to win an election to the U.S. Senate in a write-in campaign. So how did Murkowski manage to pull this off?
Well, I think we first must look at the primary campaign. And I've made this comment to a number of folks, so it's not unique this morning. If you run a very, very low-energy primary campaign, a lot of voters will not be engaged. They will not go show up to vote. Even though we had pretty good voter turnout, Murkowski lost by slightly over 2,000 votes, essentially 53,000 to 55,000. I talked to a number of people who were upset with Lisa's voting record, and they said, well, they definitely wanted her back, but they voted to point out that they weren't happy. I don't know whether that was 500 people or 2,000 or 10,000 people, but there was some significant number of people who were voting in the primary to send a message. Well, they wound up with a message on the day after the votes were counted that Lisa had lost. And she then also had minimized her expenditures to motivate people to go vote. Polling data indicated 10 days out that she was more than 20 points ahead. And the only thing I can say for the 20 points ahead two weeks out is very much like the football team that's ahead by 14 points at halftime.
Mm. Now, I know that, or I've seen Sarah Palin has made some major political gaffes of late, regardless of what you hear Fox News say. Sarah Palin is going to have to slow things down, and Newt Gingrich has said as much. Now, do you believe in the aftermath of the whole bullseye map fiasco that was brought to light by the Arizona Congresswoman Gabby Giffords shooting, that Sarah Palin remains a viable political entity?
Things always change. I always remember a wonderful comment made by Alaska State Senator Tim Kelly. And it was that every politician has an expiration date, but only a few know where their expiration date is published. And it's in that light that the evolution of the process called the selection of a presidential candidate is long and tedious. If we remember approximately 4 years ago at this time, or even 5 years ago at this time, a gentleman from the great city of New York was the odds-on favorite to be the Republican nominee, Rudy Giuliani. And in the critical 6 months, the second half of 2007, he went from being extremely prominent and on everybody's radar to being less important, and by the middle of February had basically evaporated. So presidential process, selection process, is terribly, terribly hard to forecast. Palin has suffered some loss of credibility, some loss of popularity. Turning this around will be important for her. On the other hand, I don't know that her primary mission in life is to run for president. So it's hard to tell exactly what the former governor is going to do.
Mm. So I take that as kind of a maybe she goes forward with the run for president and she might even succeed. Too early to tell, but it may not be her
way
purpose
too early
in life.
To tell.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that she may continue doing what she does well, very well, which is engaging and motivating folks on causes and issues and very specific tasks.
Of course. Now, you said that Sarah Palin is good at going out and getting folks excited about Republican candidates. But do you think, and do other Republicans believe, you were just in Washington, D.C., as we talked about with other Republicans, do you think that Sarah Palin did more to help or to hurt the 2010 midterm elections in the way of promoting Republicans?
I think the basic position of motivating folks to participate, encouraging people to come out, I think she helped in a generalized case. In some specific races where she got involved and endorsed an individual who didn't win the primary. I mean, for example, in Wyoming, she endorsed a candidate. Someone else won the primary, and that person went on to be elected the new governor. Not sure that it was a big impact one way or the other. In Delaware, where there was a Republican who was the odds-on favorite to win, endorsing someone else who just never got the traction from the entire Republican center-right world and allowed the Democrats to elect a D, it was harmful. So it depends on which state and what set of circumstances.
Well, I think the situation in Wyoming with Governor Meade, who actually won that election, was sort of unique. He came out of nowhere.
Well, he may have come out of nowhere. On the other hand, Governor Meade is Clifford Hansen's grandson, and his mother was active in politics. His grandfather was active in politics for over 50 years. So there was a constituency that went there where Palin endorsed Alan Simpson's son, who I believe ultimately finished third in a four-way race.
Curious that you would endorse Al Simpson's son, because Al Simpson is the former senator from Wyoming and is serving on the Obama administration's kind of task force that's looking at where we can cut the budget. And it's basically a Democratic program to get Republicans on board, in the way I see it.
Well, but Al was recruited. My recollection is the governor endorsed the younger Simpson about the time this happened, or maybe even before it came into formation. But Simpson was an outspoken Westerner and probably by far the most conservative guy on that bipartisan venture.
Okay, so he is a staunch conservative, so it made sense for Palin to give the endorsement
probably
to his
son. One of the most articulate senators from the West that we've ever had. And a guy who could go toe-to-toe with a chap from a Chappaquiddick fame, as he and Kennedy frequently debated the opposite sides of various issues when they were both in the United States Senate.
Randy, talking with Randy Rudrick here, he is the chairman of the Alaska State Republican Party. The Tea Party at large, are Republicans in favor of this, or would they like to see it morph into the Republican Party?
I think it provides an opportunity for folks to stay issue-focused rather than process-focused. And I think that's healthy. Most of the folks that are involved in Tea Party activities are looking at trying to reduce government, get government back to something that the Constitution suggests rather than what has morphed into existence in Washington or in state capitals. I think Chris Christie is a manifestation of done right, or restricting the size and growth of government, eliminating government functions, and I think we'll see people like Christie Nome, who is a Republican, who is clearly engaged in many of the issues the Tea Party folks support out of South Dakota, will be a leader in Washington along with Michelle Bachmann from Minnesota in pushing to return activities to the private sector, to the individual, to the citizen, rather than having them trapped by regulation and law and being restricted in what you can do because someone took the time to write a law to limit your freedom.
In our final few moments of the program, I want to turn our attention to the legislation being proposed by Governor Sean Parnell. What he is trying to do is he's trying to reduce the tax that is imposed by the state of Alaska on the production of oil and gas. Now, the tax rate has been blamed for reducing the amount of drilling going on in Alaska and production and causing declines in the Alaska oil industry. Is this enough action on the part of Governor Parnell to jumpstart oil production in the state?
Depends on how far we go. It is definitely a good start. We tried to do some things this past year in the Cook Inlet, which may be producing some green shoots on people doing things. It is very, very important that we reduce the government ownership aspect in things going right. The escalating tax structure definitely made Alaska one of the worst places to invest, and exploration drilling in Alaska dried up. That is when you have zero investment in exploration work, it's not good, because if you're not finding anything new, all you're doing is managing the existing asset base, which is obviously in decline. So Sean is on the right track. I commend him for as our newly elected governor, elected by the largest percentage vote ever. The word landslide was never used because it was overlooked. 59% of Alaskans voted for Governor Parnell, and I think that he is on the right track.
Now, maybe just one final question for you, Randy. Maybe two more questions. One is there a political future for Joe Miller?
It depends. Depends on who runs and where the sense of the electorate goes. He has been arguing some points that were hollow in the view of six judges. They found no merit to his argument. We're going to review some of this carefully in terms of state legislation. And it's a question of how Joe wants to pursue his future in politics, because he really didn't deal with any issues or anything other than just some election tasks for the last 45 days that he was visible to Alaska voters.
Mm. Now, about this redistricting plan on the state level that Alaska is going to be going through, this is of concern to a lot of the smaller communities where natives make up a larger share often of the population. How is redistricting going to go, and what is it going to do to small-town Alaska?
Well, the legislature passed a ballot measure, which was defeated by the voters, to increase the size of the legislature. That would have allowed more seats, which would have kept districts smaller. There's several pieces of litigation this past decade that I'm still reviewing myself, but it looks like we're going to see further growth in legislative districts in the West, which will mean less representation per citizen, because the state population has grown by over 80,000 in the last 10 years, which means that the legislative district, the ideal size district, will have grown by about 2,100 people. And many of our rural legislative districts have actually lost population. So they're going to need to increase significantly the boundaries to incorporate enough citizens, and that is going to have an impact on every rural area by reducing their representation.
Well, thank you very much. I've been listening to Randy Rudrick. He is the chairman of the Alaska State Republican Party. Thanks for coming on the program today.
Certainly. I appreciate the opportunity and look forward to returning.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
That is Meet the People, and you were listening to Randy Rudrick. He is the state chairman of the Alaska Republican Party. I'm Kels Hetherington.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.